Freedonians gone to war. Each native son will grab a gun and run away to war. This is a fact we can't ignore. In case you haven't heard before, I think they think we're going to war. I think they think we're going to war. I think they think we're going to war. We're going to war. We're going to war.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I want to welcome you. Wait a minute, this isn't once again. This is a new thing.
Progressive News Network has started a whole new adventure.
The new adventure is we are starting a few shows.
Progressive News Network has begun to bring you
Not just political news, but also comedy.
We're going to be bringing you a new presentation also of the, hold on one second.
One of my speakers turned on listening to the show, so please turn off your speakers.
because we've got a big feedback loop right now.
Okay.
Turn those down now.
Okay. That's not quite good enough yet.
Please turn it down even more.
I guess I don't know if it's Mickey or Amy, but turn off your speaker.
Thanks so much.
Okay, Progressive News Network is now a series of new shows. Food show, gardening show, and this comedy show.
And in just a minute, I'm joined by colleagues.
We're going to help us with this new show.
It's the Comedy Playhouse. Progressive News Network.
And before we go in, I want to play this one for you.
And that's the sound file of laughter.
And hopefully we're going to find lots of laughter together.
And let me put on some Elvis for a second while we sort out a couple technical details.
Okay, we're going to start off with some jokes while we wait for our colleagues to get here. First joke I want to give you, we have a series of musical jokes for you. How can you get two piccolo players to play in perfect unison? And the answer is, shoot one. What's the difference between a fiddle and a violin? Who cares? Neither one's a guitar. How do you know when the stage is level? Well, that's because the drummer is drooling out of both sides of his lips. What do you call a guitarist who breaks up with his girlfriend? Homeless, that's for sure, homeless. What's the definition of a minor second? Well, that's two oboists playing in perfect unison. How do you get a guitar player off your front porch? Pay for the pizza. And there we go. A couple was having marital difficulties and consulted a marriage counselor. After meeting with them, the counselor told them that their problem could be traced to a lack of communication. "You two need to talk," he said. "So I recommend that you go to a jazz club and just wait until it's time for the bass player to solo. Then start talking like everyone else." There's an old musician joke that goes like this. What is the most unused phrase in the English language? That's easy. It's, isn't that the bass player's Porsche? And here we go. We've got one of our players here. And who do I have now?
This is Mickey.
Hey, Mick. How you doing, kiddo?
I'm okay. It's pretty wild and woolly, minding my own business here, but I'm okay.
That's good. That's good. Oops. We can't use that source. For some reason, we've got a loop back. Isn't that interesting? Okay. And, Mick, I understand you have some jokes with you, too.
I have a really good joke, I think.
Okay.
I found one.
Give it to us.
In a crowded city at a busy bus stop, a woman who was waiting for a bus was wearing a tight leather skirt. As the bus stopped and it was her turn to get on, she became aware that her skirt was too tight to allow her leg to come up to the height of the first step of the bus. Slightly embarrassed and with a quick smile to the bus driver, she reached behind her to unzip her skirt a little, thinking that this would give her enough slack to raise her leg. Again, she tried to make the step, only to discover she still couldn't. So, a little more embarrassed, she once again reached behind her to unzip her skirt a little more. For the second time, she attempted the step, and once again, much to her chagrin, she could not raise her leg. With a little smile to the driver, she again reached behind to unzip a little more and again was unable to make the step. About this time, a large Texan who was standing behind her picked her up easily by the waist and placed her gently on the step of the bus. She went ballistic and turned to the would-be Samaritan and screeched, "How dare you touch my body? I don't even know who you are!" And the Texan smiled and drawled, "Well, ma'am, normally I'd agree with you, but after you unzipped my fly three times, I kind of figured we was friends."
Very good. How many guitar players does it take to cover a Stevie Ray Vaughan tune? Evidently, all of them. All of them. And there we go. Okay. St. Peter is checking on the new arrivals in heaven. What did you do on earth? I was a surgeon. I helped the lame to walk. You can go right on through the pearly gates. Next person. What did you do on earth? I was a school teacher. I taught the blind to see. Fine, go right on through the pearly gates. And then finally, the next person comes up. St. Peter says, and you, what did you do on earth? Gentleman pipes up, I was a musician. I helped make sad people happy. St. Peter turns to him and said, you can load in through the kitchen. Another one of those excellent musician jokes. Okay. A guy playing trombone in the opera had a fantastic gig on the day he went to play in the opera. He tried to find a placement, but without success. Finally, he went to his housekeeper and convinced him to do the replacement. I'll give you my other trombone. You can just look at what the guy next to you is doing, and it'll be okay. Next morning, he asked the housekeeper, how was it? Catastrophe. Your colleague also sent his housekeeper to replace him.
Oh, my.
It looks like.
We have.
The repeater again.
And now.
Kablip. Here comes Leon Russell.
Keep it.
Okay, that was Leon Russell and his tune Sweet Home Chicago. Well, now we've got one of our other colleagues. We've got two players, and we're going to go ahead and do a bit of a skit we have for you today. And it's called In the Kingdom of Abby Lovey. Now, let me set this for you. We have entered the giant corporate headquarters of your local city hall, now completely owned and operated as a wholly owned subsidiary of the corporation. Which corporation, you may ask? Well, never you mind. That's for us to know and you to find out. So here we are. We're at the downtown central office of your local government, as I say, now a wholly owned subsidiary of the corporation. And we call this little skit In the Kingdom of Abby Lovey. Our players are the town crier, a female business unit 001, a female business unit 002, a male business unit 01, and the austere corporate father figure, who you may safely assume has been revised two or three times since your last corporate overlord. And here we go. Town crier says, Business unit 001 may approach with a scheduled report.
Oh, please excuse me, oh great corporate father. I'm here to report my monthly flow.
Art thou contracted to replicate this cycle?
Oh, great corporate father, I'm yet uncontracted.
Then thou mayst draw the appropriate loss schedule forms and the appropriate supplies. Fill thou the forms promptly, girl.
Oh, great corporate father, thank you. Thank you. I will.
Then thou art downloaded. Business unit 001 type mail approaches with a cancellation request.
Oh, great corporate father. I come before you with a request that my replication partner be supplied with a cancellation policy, corporate father.
Hast thou and thy replication partner fulfilled the equal replacement creation provision of your contract?
Oh, yes, great corporate father. My replication associate and I have two replicants, two male units, and they thrive. And sir, their consumer ratings are well within the parameters.
In what zone dost thy replicants and thy replication partner consume?
Oh, great corporate father, we consume in sector Z5.
Sector Z5 is underperforming in female replications. Thy request for replication cancellation is denied.
But, great corporate father, my associate in replication has increased healthcare costs associated with previous replication activities. Healthcare units have had to be summoned. They've issued Form 32 with codicils and addenda. I have filed all these with the clerk.
These factors have been incorporated in our analysis. Thy request for replication cancellation has been denied.
My replication health unit is at risk, oh great corporate father. We have filed our Form 32 and have been refused. If my replication associate is refused the cancellation schedule and the appropriate dietary designations made, she may be unable to fulfill her contracted childcare activities, and her her consumer functions may inadvertently be reduced and maybe even canceled, requiring a replacement childcare contractee.
End statement. Thy request for replication cancellation is denied with prejudice.
Town crier.
Science unit 002 female may approach with a reassignment report request.
Huh.
Oh, great, corporate father. I have a minor request. My roommate and I would like to re-register as associates in replication. She has been Schedule B for several years. She has produced 3 children units, so we would like authorization to become replication associates.
Error, error, error. If replication control cannot process replication ratios, error, error. Licensing routines are disabled.
Oh, great, corporate father. My technical license is in genetic manipulation, so now we are both replicant-enabled and are scheduling our product launch for late spring.
Oh, how will I calculate the SKU numbers? Error, error, error.
Town crier.
Reboot, reboot. Session deleted. Null, null.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This is the first of many skits you'll be hearing in the future. This product launch today, our version 001 of the PNN Comedy Playhouse, has brought to you this skit for your amusement and edification. We also have a fine selection of additional material. Can I ask you, Amy, if you have a joke for us today?
I happen to have a joke. A neutron walks into a bar. He asks the bartender, "How much for a beer?" Bartender looks at him and says, "For you, no charge." Two atoms bump into each other. One says, "I think I lost an electron." The other says, "Are you sure?" To which the first replies, "I'm positive."
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a reading from Mark Twain's Letters from the Earth. This is an interesting set of documents that Twain had produced. His family preferred that they were not read, were not distributed, so they weren't published until after he was born. Oops, the other born, the borning to another life.
"I have told you nothing about man that is not true. You must pardon me if I repeat that remark now and then in these letters. I want you to take seriously the things that I'm telling you, and I feel that if I were in your place and you in mine, I should need to that reminder from time to time to keep my credulity from flagging. For there is nothing about man that is not strange to an immortal. He looks at nothing as we look at it. His sense of proportion is quite different from ours, and his sense of value so widely divergent from ours that with all our large intellectual powers, it's not likely even the most gifted among us would ever be quite able to understand him. For instance, take this sample. He has imagined a heaven and left entirely out of it the supremest of all his delights, the one ecstasy that stands first and foremost in the heart of every individual of his race, and that ours, that of replication and sexual intercourse. It is as if a lost and perishing person in a roasting desert should be told by a rescuer he might choose and have all the longed-for things but one, and should elect to leave out water. Heaven is like himself, strange, interesting, astonishing, and grotesque. I give you my word, it is not a single feature in it that he actually values. It consists utterly and entirely of diversions which he cares next to nothing about here on earth, yet is quite sure he will like them in heaven. Isn't it curious? Isn't it interesting? And you must not think that I'm exaggerating, for it is so, and I will give you the details. Most men do not sing. Most men cannot sing. Most men
will not stay when others are singing if it be continued more than an hour or two. Note that. Only about 2 men in 100 can play upon a musical instrument, and not 4 in 100 have any wish to learn how. Set that down. Many men pray. Not many of them like to do it. A few pray long. The others make a short cut. More men go to church than want to. 49 men in 50, the Sabbath day is a dreary, dreary bore. And of all the men in a church on Sunday, 2/3 are tired, and when the service is half over, the rest before it are finished. Gladdest moment of all of them is when the preacher uplifts his hand for the benediction. You can hear the soft rustle of relief that sweeps through the house, and you recognize it is the eloquent voice of gratitude. All nations look down upon other nations. All nations dislike other nations. All nations despise every other color of nations and whatever the hue, and oppress them whenever they can. They don't allow them in their churches and schools. All the world hates those except when they're rich. And I ask you all these particulars, and further, all sane people detest noise. All sane people have variety in their life. Monotony quickly wearies them, one and all. Every man, according to his mental equipment that has fell into his share, exercises his intellect constantly, ceaselessly, and this exercise makes up a vast, valued, and essential part of his life. The lowest intellect, like the highest, possesses a skill of some kind and takes a keen pleasure in testing it, proving it, and perfecting it. The urchin who is his comrade, superior in games, is as diligent and enthusiastic in his practice as are the sculptor, the painter, the pianist, the musician, the mathematician, and the rest. Not one of them could be happy if his talent were put in an interdict. Now, you have the facts. You know what the human race enjoys, what it doesn't. It's invented a heaven out of its own head, and all by itself, guess what it is. 1,500 eternities, you couldn't guess it. The ablest mind known to you or me in 50 million aeons couldn't do it. Very well, I will tell you about it. But before we do that, Mickey, how about a joke?
Okay. Wait a minute. I had one here. An odd man and woman were married for many years. Whenever there was a confrontation, yelling could be heard deep into the night. The man would shout, "When I die, I will come out of the grave and haunt you for the rest of your life." He liked believing he was feared. To everyone's relief, he died of a heart attack when he was 88. His wife had a closed casket at the funeral. Weeks after the burial, concerned neighbors asked, "Were you ever afraid he may dig his way out of the grave to haunt you?" And the wife said, "Let him dig. I had him buried face down, and I know he won't ask for directions."
Amy, how about you? Do you have a joke for us? Oh, Amy's not there, so the joke's on us. I've got one. What's the difference between an oboe and an onion? Any idea, Amy? Oh, any idea, Mickey?
An oboe and an onion?
An oboe and an onion.
Gee. I don't know. They both could. The difference. No, I don't
know.
Well,
no one cries when you chop up an oboe. Mommy,
I thought
mommy.
It had something to do with crying. I did. Really did. But I'm like, no, that's not right.
mommy, when I grow up, I want to be a guitar player. Well, Johnny, it's one or the other. What's the difference between it? Go ahead.
There was a Scottish house painter named Smokey McGregor who was very interested in making a penny where he could. So he often thinned down his paint to make it go a wee bit further. As it happened, he got away with this for some time, but eventually the Baptist Church decided to do a big restoration job on the outside of one of their biggest buildings. Smokey put in a bid, and because his price was so low, he got the job. So he set about erecting the scaffolding and setting up the planks and buying the paint and, yes, I'm sorry to say, thinning it down with water. Well, Smokey was up on the scaffolding painting away, and the job was nearly completed when suddenly there was a horrendous clap of thunder. The sky opened and the rain poured down, washing the thin paint from all over the church and knocking Smokey clear off the scaffold to land on the lawn among the gravestones, surrounded by telltale puddles of the thinned and useless paint. Smokey was no fool. He knew this was a judgment from the Almighty, so he got down on his knees and cried, oh, God, forgive me, what should I do? And from the thunder a mighty voice spoke, repaint, repaint, and thin no more.
Very good. Here's a series of jokes that come from a fifth grade science teacher. She asked the teacher asked the students, what is the definition of a protein? The student said, a protein is made up of a bunch of mean old acids. A teacher asked the question, what kind of tails do opossums have? The student answered, reprehensible tails. What is the spinal column? Well, the student said, it's a bunch of bones. And the head sits at the top and you sit on the bottom. How long does it take the Earth to rotate about its axis? Student said, well, the Earth makes a resolution once every 24 hours. Teacher said, well, that's a lot of wishful thinking, that's for sure. Mickey, do you have another one?
Yep. I have a friend that sends me jokes, and they're kind of cute sometimes. The pastor entered his donkey in a race, and it won. The pastor was so pleased with the donkey that he entered it in the next race, and it won that race, too. The local paper read, Pastor's Ass Out Front. The bishop was so upset with this kind of publicity that he ordered the pastor not to enter the donkey in another race. The next day, the local paper headline read, Bishop Scratches Pastor's Ass. This was too much for the bishop, so he ordered the pastor to get rid of the donkey. The pastor decided to give it to a nun in a nearby convent. The local paper, hearing of the news, posted the following headline for the next day. Nun has best ass in town. The bishop fainted. He informed the nun that she would have to get rid of the donkey as soon as possible, so she sold it to a local farmer for $10. The next day, the paper read, Nun sells ass for $10. This was too much for the bishop, so he ordered the nun to buy back the donkey and take it to the plains where it could run wild. The next day, the headlines read, Nun announces her ass is wild and free, and the bishop was buried the next day.
Oh, my.
Oh, I thought it was kind of cute.
Okie dokie. One of the other ones I wanted to bring to you is, this is a joke that comes from the astronomy section. Whatever is the missing mass of the universe, I just hope it's not cockroaches, said a New York entity. Astronomy joke. The astronomy major had a part-time job working in the university's off-campus housing. One day, a fellow student, upon entering an office in thought about the morning lecture, asked, what's an astronomical unit? To which the astronomy major replied, one hell of a big apartment. Okay, here we go. Let's see here. I've got another one right this way. Murphy's 10 Laws for Experimentalists. If something can go wrong, it will do just before your grant runs out. If the reading on your detector is correct, then somehow you've forgotten to plug it in. If several things can go wrong, they will do all at the same time. If nothing goes wrong with your experiment, something still will. Left unto itself, your experiment will go from bad to worse. On the other hand, if you pay attention to the experiment, it'll take three times longer than you thought it would. Nature is both subtle and malicious. Murphy stole this one from Albert Einstein. A straight line will never fit in your data, and using a wiggly line will result in a rejection by the referees of the publication. If you make a great discovery today, you will find a major error in your methods tomorrow. In contrast to a radio, banging your apparatus when you're at peak frustration will not fix it permanently. It will break it, and for this reason, it's important to remain calm at all times. And just when your experiment is about to succeed, you will run out of grant money. Do you have another one, my dear?
Actually, I do. It's probably not politically correct, but while in China, an American man is very sexually promiscuous and does not use a condom the entire time he is there. A week after arriving back home in the States, he wakes one morning to find his penis covered with bright green and purple spots. Horrified, he immediately goes to see a doctor. The doctor, never having seen anything like this before, orders some tests and tells the man to return in 2 days for the results. The man returns a couple of days later, and the doctor says, I've got bad news for you. You've contracted Mongolian VD. It's very rare and almost unheard of here in the U.S. We know very little about it. The man looks perplexed and says, well, give me a shot or something and fix me up, doc. Doctor answers, I'm sorry, there's no known cure. We're going to have to amputate your penis. And the man screams in horror, absolutely not. I want a second opinion. And the doctor replies, well, it's your choice. Go ahead if you want, but surgery is your only option. The next day, the man seeks out a Chinese doctor, figuring that he'll know more about the disease. Chinese doctor examines his penis and proclaims, ah, yes, Mongolian VD, very, very rare disease. And the guy says to the doctor, yeah, yeah, I already know that, but what can we do? My American doctor wants to cut off my penis. And Chinese doctor shakes his head and laughs. Stupid American doctor. Always want to operate. Make more money that way. No need to amputate. Oh, thank God, the man explained. Yes, the Chinese doctor says. Wait 2 weeks. Fall off by itself.
Oh, oh, oh. Oh, my
You didn't expect that.
Certainly didn't. Tell me, why is it that clarinetists leave their cases on the dashboard?
It broke up a little bit. Why did clarinetists leave their cases on the what?
On the dashboard.
On the dashboard. Their cases on the dashboard. I have no idea.
So they can park in handicap zones. What's the difference between a dead squirrel in the road and a trombonist?
I don't know.
Chances are the trombonist, the dead squirrel was on his way to a gig. Well, what's the difference between a lawnmower and a soprano sax? Two. Number one, you can tune a lawnmower. And number two, the neighbors are upset if you borrow a lawnmower and don't bring it back. Okay, if you were lost in the woods, who would you trust for directions? An in-tune tenor sax player, an out-of-tune tenor sax player, or Santa Claus? The answer is obvious. The out-of-tune sax player. The other two indicate that you're hallucinating. How do you make a chainsaw sound like a baritone sax?
Don't know.
Add vibrato. Okay. How many trumpet players does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know.
Five. One to handle the bulb, the other four to tell them how much better they could have done it.
Okay.
I say this as a former trumpet player. Why don't gorillas play trumpet? They're too sensitive.
You have to be a musician to understand this.
Okay. What do you say to a guitar player in a three-piece suit? Will the defendant please rise?
Okay.
How is an orgasm like a drum solo? You can tell it's coming, but there's no way to stop it.
That's cute.
This is one of my favorites. How do you make a trombone sound like a French horn? Stick your hand in the bell and play all the wrong notes. How do you improve the aerodynamics of a trombonist's car? Take the Domino's pizza sign off the roof.
Okay,
this is from a group called Wedding Band Requests. Dear band leader, thank you for your letter. I really do think you have an attitude problem and do want to make a few requests, if you don't mind. What me and my wife were thinking was, any Keith Jarrett composition from his solo series, please arrange for a full ensemble and nothing in 4/4 time, please. Mahavishnu Orchestra, Dance of Maya, and please have the guitar player play John McLaughlin's solo from the live performance November 16, 1972 at the Chrysler Arena. My wife and I were at the show and particularly liked his use of polyrhythmics. And if you find that too difficult, you can leave out the feedback. Your choice. Please play John Coltrane's duet with Pharoah Sanders. I understand that their use of an atonality is not everyone's cup of tea, but my guests are usually fond of high register tenor saxes. We also thought a little Stravinsky would be nice, particularly like The Rite of Spring. If you want to use the sheet music, it's okay. My husband likes it about one quarter notes, 93 beats per minute. Also, then for the candle lighting ceremony, please learn Frank Zappa's The Great Wazoo. If you want to play it in the original B-flat, that would be okay. And yes, Cousin Jeannie does want to sing the baritone sax solo. Please don't say no. It would just hurt her feelings. And by the way, we would be happy to pay each member an extra $25 for any inconvenience. Thank you, and don't be late. Tell me, Mick, do you have a science joke?
A science joke?
Well, if you've got instead a music joke, that would be fine.
It could be considered sort of a showbiz joke, maybe.
Oh, that'll work.
It's a groaner, but it's not, you know. The local news station was interviewing an 80-year-old lady because she had just gotten married for the fourth time. The interviewer asked her questions about her life, about what it felt to be marrying again at 80, and then about her new husband's occupation. "He's a funeral director," she answered. "Interesting," the newsman thought. He then asked her if she wouldn't mind telling him a little about her first three husbands and what they did for a living. She paused for a few moments, needing time to reflect on all those years. After a short time, a smile came to her face, and she answered proudly, explaining that she first married a banker when she was in her 20s, then a circus ringmaster when in her 40s, and a preacher when in her 60s, and now in her 80s, a funeral director. The interviewer looked at her quite astonished and asked why she had married four men with such diverse careers. Wait for it. She smiled and explained, "I married one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, and four to go."
That's pretty good. Now these, my friend,
cute.
I have to tell you, I'm going to warn you in advance, these are highly technical musical jokes, and obviously the full audience will absolutely require further research to appreciate these. So here we go. A C, an E flat, and a G go into a bar. Bartender said, I'm sorry, we don't serve minors. The E flat leaves, and C and G have an open fifth between them, and after a few drinks, G is out flat. F comes in, tries to augment the situation, but is not sharp enough. D comes into the bar, heads straight for the bathroom, saying, "Excuse me, I'll be just a second." Now, A comes into the bar, but the bartender is not convinced that this relative of C is not a minor and sends him out. The bartender then notices a B-flat hiding in the end of the bar and shouts, "Get out now! You're the seventh minor I've found in this bar tonight." The next night, E-flat, not easily deflated, comes into the bar in a three-piece suit with a nicely shined shoe. The bartender, who used to have a nice corporate job until his company downsized, says, "You're looking pretty sharp tonight. Come on in. This could be a major development." And in fact, E-flat takes off his suit and everything else and stands there all natural. Eventually, C, who had passed out under the bar the night before, begins to sober up and realize in horror that he's under arrest. So then C goes to trial and is convicted of contributing to the diminution of a minor and sentenced to 10 years of DS without coda at an upscale correction facility. The conviction is overturned on appeal, however, and the C is found innocent of any wrongdoing, even though accidental, and all accusations to the contrary are baseless. The bartender decides, however, since he's only had a 10 or so patrons, the soprano out in the bathroom and everything has become alto much treble, he needs a rest and closes the bar. What is the range of a tuba?
I don't know.
You don't know the range? It's about 20 yards if you have a good arm. Okay, now, what do you call someone who hangs out with musicians? Come on, you can think of it. A drummer.
Well, first thing I was thinking was groupie or roadie, but that's probably not right.
No, a drummer. Okay, now, what does the tympanist say when he gets to work?
Ba-dum-bum.
So, the tympanist says when he gets to work, would you have fries with that, sir? How? What did the drummer get on his IQ test? Ready?
Drool.
How many drummers does it take to change a light bulb?
Oh. Well, if it takes 5 trombonists, you'd really have to know what all about drummers.
None. They have machines that do that now.
Nah, okay.
How can you tell when a drummer is at your door?
They knock in rhythm?
Well, no, the knock keeps getting faster. Okay. A mind reader is at a nightclub one night and decides to give a small demonstration of her abilities. First, she reads the mind of the lead guitar player. Wow, look at the cute chicks who showed up tonight. Good crowd. Then, the mind reader reads the mind of the drummer. Hey, lots of people showed up tonight. Great, we're going to make good money. Then, the keyboard player's mind. All three of these guys have no appreciation of my talent. What a bunch of losers. Then she reads the bass player's mind. C, G. C, G. Okay. Two drummers and a violinist decide to form a band. Three of them start playing, and the sound is just awful. One drummer turns to the other and says, "We sound terrible. I don't think this is going to work. Let's get rid of the violinist." Okay. The trumpet player was on the phone with his agent. He was concerned that he didn't have a gig for a while. His agent tells him, "Listen, there aren't any gigs out there, but I found something. I can get you a gig bagging lions." To which the trumpet player says, "What the hell does it have to do with me playing?" The agent then says, "Hey, the gig pays $100 for each lion that you bag. Don't worry about playing." At this point, the drummer will take anything, so he hangs up, flies to Africa, not wanting to miss practice time. He takes his trumpet with him, now looking for the lion. He notices a lion coming toward him. The only thing he'd think of doing was playing his horn. He starts to play a beautiful ballad. Then he notices the lion starts to get sleepy and eventually goes to sleep. He grabs the lion, bags him, and throws him in the back of the truck. He goes a little further and sees another lion. And he plays a beautiful ballad, and again, the lion falls asleep. This goes on all afternoon. The lion player has about 90 lions in his truck when he sees another. And he says, "What the heck? One more won't hurt." He starts to play his ballad, notices the lion's not paying any attention to him, so he starts to playing it louder. The lion starts to run toward the trumpet player. The trumpet player starts to play faster and faster, but the lion keeps coming. The lion jumps on the trumpet player and eats him. One of the lions in the truck turns to the other lion and said, "I told you when he gets to the deaf one, the gig would be over." Do you have another joke, my dear?
I have punography.
Wonderful. What's that?
Puns. I tried to catch some fog. I missed. When chemists die, they bury them. Oh, I have a bunch of them. Jokes about German sausage are the worst. A soldier who survived mustard gas and pepper spray is now a seasoned veteran. I know a guy who's addicted to brake fluid. He says he can stop any time. How does Moses make his tea? He brews it. I stayed up all night to see where the sun went. Then it dawned on me. This girl said she recognized me from the vegetarian club, but I'd never met her before. I pronounced it wrong. I'm reading a book about anti-gravity. I can't put it down. I did a theatrical performance about puns. It was a play on words. They told me I had type A blood, but it was type O. This dyslexic man walks into a bra. I didn't like my beard at first, then it grew on me.
There you go.
When you get a bladder infection, you're in trouble. What does a clock do when it's hungry? It goes back 4 seconds. I wondered why the baseball was getting bigger. Then it hit me. Broken pencils are pointless.
There you go.
What do you call a dinosaur with an extensive vocabulary?
Let's see. I don't know.
A thesaurus.
Okay.
It has no kidney bank, but it does have a liver pool. There's only 5 more.
Go ahead.
I used to be a banker, but then I lost interest. I dropped out of communism class because of lousy marks. All the toilets in London police stations have been stolen. Police say they have nothing to go on. I took the job at a bakery because I needed dough. Velcro, what a ripoff. And last, cartoonist found dead in home. Details are sketchy.
How about this one? How long does a harp stay in tune?
I don't know.
About 20 minutes until someone opens the door. Why are the violinist's fingers like lightning?
They rarely strike
the same plot twice. How can you tell if the violin is out of tune? The bow is moving. Why is a violinist like a Scud missile?
I don't know.
Both are offensive and inaccurate. This is one everybody can appreciate. What do violinists use for birth control? Their personalities.
How would you know that unless you knew that?
There you go. What's the difference between a violinist and a dog?
I don't know.
The dog knows when to stop scratching. Why are violins smaller than violas?
Don't know.
Well, they're really the same size, but the violinist's head are bigger. What's the most significant difference between a cello and a viola?
Well, the cello is much bigger, no?
Well, as a matter of fact,
and
the cello
deeper?
Burns longer.
It burns longer.
Okay. What's the difference between violas and terrorists?
Don't know.
Terrorists have sympathizers.
Okay.
What's the difference between a cello and a coffin?
I don't know.
Well, with a coffin, the dead guy's on the inside.
That's funny.
Why are rock band intermissions limited to 20 minutes?
Don't know.
So you don't have to retrain the drummers. Okay. What's the difference between a guitar player and a bag of garbage?
Oh, I wouldn't know that.
Well, the garbage gets taken out. Why do they have to bury guitar players 15 or 16 feet down?
I don't know.
Well, because deep down, they're very nice people.
Okay.
One day, a local pub sees 6 guys walk in, obviously in pairs. They sit down, order their favorite after-work drinks. The first 2 seat themselves and are served by the bartender, were 2 guys working at a major university whose IQs were so high they could hardly be measured. They began discussing quantum mechanics to the fine points of particle physics, and neither one as brilliantly as the other. The bartender then went over to the next pair, who were regular guys with ordinary jobs, with average IQs, smoozing about how hard it was today to keep up with bill payments, how high taxes were, how corrupt politicians were, and with all the day-to-day struggles most everyone has. The last two bartenders served were two badly educated, ill-mannered dolts with very low IQs that could be measured by on any IQ test. And as soon as they ordered, the bartender overheard one say to the other, "Hey, I meant to ask you, do you use a flat round or a round wound on your bass?" And now I'm going to put a little bit of music on for a second. This is Leon Russell, "Learn How to Boogie."
Huh.